An orange-roofed oriental temple on a forested hillside. Shaven-headed monks sit forming a fighting square. They wear different coloured robes on each side, orange, black, yellow and blue. Two men wearing only black pants stand together in the middle. Mr. Braithwaite, a balding mustachioed man in a suit, watches from nearby. An elderly bearded monk nods to the fighters, who face each other and bow low. They assume fighting stances. One is Lee, a handsome, muscular, lithe, oriental man in his 20s. His face is a mask of concentration. His opponent is taller and bulkier. They circle warily, both wearing fighting gloves. Lee lunges. Lee punches and dumps his opponent. Lee stares at the other fighter. Lee dances round and assumes another stance. Lee dodges and punches. Lee repeatedly throws the bigger man and then pins him. The man beats his hand on the mat, submitting. They stand and bow to each other, and then to the older monk. Lee smiles. Four black-clad monks raise fists, making a wall, and look at him expectantly. Lee somersaults and catapults himself over them. On a terrace, Lee, smartly dressed in a simple Chinese suit, bows to the orange-clad senior monk.
Teacher?
I see your talents have gone beyond the mere physical level. Your skills are now at the point of spiritual insight. I have several questions. What is the highest technique you hope to achieve?
To have no technique.
Very good. What are your thoughts when facing an opponent?
There is no opponent.
And why is that?
Because the word I does not exist.
So, continue.
A good fight should be like a small play, but played seriously. A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready. Not thinking, yet not dreaming. Ready for whatever may come. When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Now, you must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions, behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and it will break the enemy. The it that you refer to is a powerful weapon, easily misused by the martial artist who deserts his vows. For centuries now, the code of the Shaolin Temple has been preserved. Remember, the honor of our brotherhood has been held true. Tell me now the Shaolin Commandment number 13.
A martial artist has to take responsibility for himself and to accept the consequences of his own doing.
I'm ashamed to tell you now, among all the Shaolin men I have taught, there is one who has turned the ways of knowledge and strength to his own base ends. He has perverted all we hold sacred. His name is Han. In defiance of all our beliefs, he has brought disgrace to the Shaolin Temple. So, it is now for you to reclaim our lost honor.
Yes, I understand.
There is a man here. You will go to him.
Lee nods curtly. Later, Lee, in a blue jacket with white cuffs, walks through a glade. Braithwaite shakes his hand.
Hello, Mr. Lee. My name's Braithwaite.
Hello, Mr. Braithwaite.
I've come to speak to you about a matter of great importance.
Have some tea?
Yes, indeed. This is very pleasant.
At an outside table, they are served tea in tiny, ornate cups. Lee rises briefly and nods in thanks.
Mr. Lee, I've come to speak to you about a tournament of martial arts. A tournament to which you've already received an invitation. Specifically, a tournament organized by Mr. Han.
Han's tournament.
I know. But we'd very much like you to attend that particular tournament, Mr. Lee.
We, Mr. Braithwaite?
A teenage boy approaches.
It's Lau's time.
Yes, of course.
The boy bows and clasps his hand in greeting. Lee screws his fist into the palm of his other hand and nods.
Kick me.
Lee drops into a defensive stance. The boy kicks at Lee's head and misses.
What was that? An exhibition? We need emotional content. Try again.
The boy purses his mouth in determination. He kicks out again. The boy kicks air as Lee glides back effortlessly. Lee closes in.
I said emotional content, not anger. Now try again. With me.
Lee's eyes bore into the teenager. The boy shuffles and kicks. Lee dodges.
That's it. How did it feel to you?
Let me think.
Don't think. Feel. It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory. Do you understand?
The boy nods and smiles. Lee slaps his crown.
Never take your eyes off your opponent, even when you bow. That's it.
The boy bows, eyeing Lee all the time, then trots away. Lee returns to watching Braithwaite. A vista of 1970s Hong Kong. A Warner Brothers production. Starring Bruce Lee and John Saxon. Enter the Dragon. Downtown Hong Kong. Grimy buildings, crowded streets. Also starring Anna Capri, Shi Qian, Bob Wall. A passenger jet looms over a busy freeway. Co-starring Angela Mao Ying, Betty Chung, Jeffrey Weeks, Yang Tse, Peter Archer. Just off the plane, Williams, a sharply dressed African-American with a full afro, puts on shades and surveys all around. Later, in a red jacket and mustard turtleneck, he prowls narrow streets festooned with Chinese signs. Caption reads, "Introducing Jim Kelly as Williams." Film edited by Kurt Hirschler and George Watters. Fighting sequences staged by Bruce Lee. Music by Lalo Schifrin. Roper, ruggedly handsome, dressed in a grey suit, rides a rickshaw, another behind for his dozen suitcases. Written by Michael Allen. Produced by Fred Weintraub and Paul Heller. In association with Raymond Chow. Directed by Robert Klaus. Braithwaite points at a screen.
There. That's Han. That's the only film we have on him. We know that he was a member of your temple, a Shaolin monk, now a renegade.
That's O'Hara behind him. Personal bodyguard. Tough, ruthless, as you might expect, being Han's bodyguard. We got our hands on a demonstration film of O'Hara. All real bricks and boards. Nothing phony about any of it. This was before he picked up a facial scar somewhere.
On screen, O'Hara is repeatedly battered with poles without flinching, before karate chopping a pile of burning slabs into pieces. A small island seen from the air.
This is where you'll be going. An island fortress, really. After the war, the nationality of the island was uncertain. And sometime after that, Han bought it.
What do you know about Han?
He lives like a king on that island. Totally self-sufficient. All of his efforts, seemingly, are directed towards supporting what he calls his school of martial arts. Han's only contact with the outside world is this tournament, which he holds every 3 years. This was a stewardess, Mary King, found floating in the harbour. Nothing unusual about a body in the harbour. But this girl was last seen at a party aboard Han's private junk. They'd reported her lost at sea before the body was found. We believe he selects attractive girls and methodically builds their dependence on drugs, then sells them to an elite clientele around the world.
What did the autopsy reveal as the cause of death?
She did not drown.
She OD'd?
Braithwaite checks inside a folder.
Yes. Cause of death was, heroin overdose.
I gather you still don't have enough to bust up his operation.
We know everything. We can prove nothing. We want you to go in there as our agent. Get us our evidence.
And come out in one piece to give it to you.
We'll give you anything you need. Electronic equipment, weapons, anything. Drink?
No, thanks. Guns! Now, why doesn't somebody pull off 45 and bang, settle it?
No, no guns. Look at this map here. As you know, the possession of a weapon is a serious offense here. Han's Island rests partly within our territorial waters. If we were given the slightest reason to believe that he has any kind of arsenal, we'd move in on him. Besides, Han would never allow guns on the island anyway. He had a bad experience with them once, and he's fearful of assassination. Can't really blame him. Any bloody fool can pull a trigger.
I guess I won't need anything.
There's a radio on the island. We'll be monitoring it, on the chance that you can get to it.
And then you'll come.
Someone will. We aren't an agency of enforcement. We function as gatherers of information, evidence, upon which interested governments can act.
I see. If there's any trouble, you make a phone call.
Oh, by the way, 2 months ago, we managed to place a female operative on the island. Since then, we've lost her. If she's still there, she might have something. Name's Mei Ling. Sure you won't have one?
No, thanks.
Hong Harbour, a motley collection of junks and boats. Lee sits regally, cross-legged in a primitive boat, piloted by an elderly man using one oar astern. High-rise buildings and mountains frame the harbour. In Lee's memory, he sits with an older man, his father.
Now the time has come to tell you something very difficult. I'm happy you have decided to go to Han's tournament.
Yeah?
The last of the tournaments were held 3 years ago. I was in the city with your sister at that time.
Lee, serious, lifts his eyes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Many of Han's men had come in from the island. They were everywhere, bullying and arrogant. We were on our way into town.
Lee's pretty sister, dressed in a blue Chinese suit, is surrounded by leering men. Beefy O'Hara places a hand on her shoulder. She slaps it away. She strides off. One thug leaps in front of her, grinning. He hugs her. She kicks him in the balls. She kicks another.
Stay back!
Lee's father slashes O'Hara's face with a flick knife.
Run! Run! Ow!
O'Hara, his face bleeding, brutally attacks Lee's father, kicking him off the narrow path. Lee's sister flees down an alleyway, pursued by the gang. She stumbles and falls in sand. Six men in casual suits and untucked shirts close in on her. A dead end. She turns to fight. She is knocked down, but trips her attacker and stands again. She kicks one thug into a murky stream. She runs away and is blocked by a locked gate. Cornered, she roundhouse kicks one assailant. She is kicked into a post. She dispatches the thug and his cohort before racing off, her cheek badly bruised. They chase after her. She blocks an attack and kicks her attacker in the belly. An elderly woman closes a window. Accosted from behind, she fells her opponent, leaps over him and kicks him in the face. A man lifts her. She clutches his face. She kicks him in the balls. Others continue the pursuit. She slams a door and bars it. Stairs going up. She throws furniture. Thugs leap through the window. Cornered in a shack, her mouth hangs open in terror. O'Hara, still bleeding, enters. Blood leaks from her mouth. O'Hara has a bloody red wound down his face. Their eyes meet. She looks down, then back up, her face now determined. She slowly lowers herself and reaches down to pick up a shard of broken window glass. Grasping it with both hands, she holds the point towards her stomach. Scarred O'Hara watches, her hands shake. Stabbing herself, she keels over, back with Lee and his father.
Now you know the truth. When you get to the city, pay your respects to your sister and your mother.
Lee sits down again, grim-faced.
I will, old man.
A tear glistens on Lee's cheek. Lee, wearing a tight-fitting grey suit, stands in a cemetery. An old man sweeps leaves. Lee looks down.
You will not agree with what I am going to do. It is contrary to all that you have taught me, and all that Su Lin believed.
Lee glances over at the sweeper.
I must leave.
Lee inclines his head slightly.
Please try to find a way to forgive me.
He strides off through gravestones. Back in the small boat in Hong Kong Harbour, the elderly pilot works his oar. Lee sits cross-legged in the front, focused and still. Nearby, Roper sits hunched in a small craft, which is piled high with suitcases. A young woman paddles. Roper glances round at a half-built junk in a shipyard. They paddle by scruffy wooden floating homes, with high-rise buildings in the background. A boat full of shrubs in baskets chugs past. Roper's memory, playing golf.
Double or nothing? That's about $1,000 a foot, Roper. Why not?
Roper smiles and leans back over his putter. He's wearing a skin-tight red polo neck. His caddy watches, a dark-skinned girl, in an outsized orange hat and tight yellow top. Roper putts and misses. She answers the phone.
I'm sorry, Mr. Roper isn't in right now. May I take a message?
Roper whacks a ball and pulls a face as it disappears into a thicket. He searches the undergrowth, club dangling in his hand. He drops it. A man dons a black leather glove. Three besuited mustachioed hoodlums surround him.
That's a tough shot, Mr. Roper.
Excuse me, fellas.
I say you can't make it.
What'll you bet?
You gotta love them. Come on, Roper. It's 175 big ones by Monday the 15th.
Only 150.
You forget interest.
Well, then maybe I ought to talk to Freddy.
Take advantage, Roper.
Come on, fellas.
It's the dough, Roper, or we gotta break something. You got it?
Roper blinks and eyes them.
Freddy says this is for your own good.
With a flurry of leaping kicks, he knocks them all out. Back on the green, a ball pops out of nowhere and rolls near the flag. Roper walks over the rise, club in hand, and walks to his caddy.
Better confirm that flight to Hong Kong for me. How much do I have left in the bank?
$63.43.
It's all yours.
Thanks. Only I think you'll need it.
You want a bet?
He grins. Back to Roper in Hong Kong Harbour. Perched in the bow of the small boat, he chews gum lazily. A little girl stares at him. They paddle past junks. Children stare. A dog on a rope clambers on a boat. The girl paddling Roper is grinning to herself. Nearby, a woman with a baby strapped to her back paddles. Williams, all in red, sits coolly in the bow, gazing around at Chinese families on boats. Williams waves at little boys, who wave back. Williams' memory, karate practice. Dapper Williams observes. The leader beckons for a man in a multicolored hat to take over.
Double punching, baby!
Williams and the leader converse, shake hands and raise fists in salute. Williams strides off. Outside, nighttime, Williams walks a back street with a suitcase. A police car trails him slowly and then accelerates, stopping just behind him.
Hey,
A policeman grabs him.
Going on a trip, are you?
Williams drops his case. The white cop, nightstick in hand, searches Williams.
Hey, this Jig's got a passport.
Where you going, Jig? Where's the plane ticket for?
Hong Kong. By Hawaii.
He's not going to Hawaii.
Well, look what we got here! Holding a police officer!
Williams knocks down the two cops, street fighting style. A dog mauls one as he lies. Williams, now driving the patrol car, reverses over a pile of rubbish and drives off at speed. Back to Hong Kong Harbour. Williams has one suitcase and a small blue bag at his feet. On board a junk, Roper smiles down at Williams as he arrives. Williams hands up his case to a Chinese seaman. Williams' face lights up.
Hey, soldier, shave it up!
Roper! Hey, how are you, man?
How am I? I'm glad to see you. That's how I am.
Hey, how long has it been?
6 years, man.
Six.
It's not as long as it seems.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
What you been doing since now?
Hanging in a little bit.
All these yours, man?
Always first class.
Same old Roper. Huh.
William spots a hulking man nearby, flexing hands.
Come here.
He motions to Roper. Lee walks past.
Parsons.
Yeah, from New Zealand. This man's putting quite a collection together.
Know him?
Never saw him before.
What do you know about this Han cat?
Just rumors. I hear he likes to live big.
Williams nods and points to the floating ghetto nearby.
They don't live so big over there. Ghettos are the same all over the world. They stink.
Same old Williams.
Yeah.
Williams smiles and nods. The elegantly crafted junk glides through the harbour, past an assortment of other wooden craft. The rocky ridge encircling the harbour is picked out in the glare of sunlight. The junk passes in front of a forest of masts. The junk's small sail fills as they cut through the placid waters. On deck, crewmen busy themselves, the guest fighters pace. On the open sea, the junk rides waves. On a crate, two praying mantises are locked in a duel. Black-shirted Chinese seamen surround them, bickering.
What do we got here? A little action. Insects. Okay, I'll lay you $50 on the big one. $50 on the big one, all right?
I'll give you 5-1.
Would you bet 100?
Lee shrugs.
You're on.
Lee smiles and looks back down at the spindly green insects wrestling slowly.
Come on, let's end this thing quickly.
Ho!
Atta baby, come on. We'll show these fellas. Yeah, that's it, come on. Just get him on his back. Come on. Come on, give up. Come on. Hey. Oh, for crying out loud. Would you believe that?
The smaller mantis pins the larger.
Dumb shit.
Lee slaps palms and punches fists with the seaman. Roper stands up unsmiling. Williams grins. Lee sticks out a hand to accept money from Roper. One seaman is carrying a basket of oranges, which Parsons kicks. The man tumbles over, spilling oranges. Parsons towers over him as he bends down to the spilled fruit. Lee watches as Parsons kicks the man over and onto Roper's suitcases. Roper's eyes follow Parsons, who paces, flexing his hands. Another seaman ducks back inside a cabin as Parsons prowls past. Parsons stands behind Lee, who's gazing out over the ocean. Parsons punches the air aggressively. Lee turns to face him.
Do I bother you?
Don't waste yourself.
What's your style?
My style? You can call it the art of fighting without fighting.
The art of fighting without fighting? Show me some of it.
Later.
Parsons throws a hand on Lee's shoulder. Lee shrugs.
All right. Don't you think we need more room?
Parsons looks around.
Where else?
That island, on a beach. We can take this boat.
Parsons peers over the side of the junk. The wind ruffles his hair. He is thinking.
Okay.
Lee's mouth crinkles in a slight smile. Parsons walks along the junk and drops into a wooden dinghy. Lee takes the rope attaching the dinghy to the junk and plays it out. The dinghy bobs away with Parsons in it.
Hey, what the hell are you doing? Hey, are you crazy? Pull me in. Pull me in.
Don't try to pull yourself up.
Get me out of this
or I'll let go of the line.
Lee hands the rope to a kid.
What's the matter with you kids? Come on, pull.
The seamen laugh at Parsons lurching unsteadily in the waterlogged craft. The kid grins and yanks on the rope. Parsons climbs on the back of the dinghy as it fills with water. Parsons shakes an angry fist. The junk sails serenely on past rocky islands. A landing stage, a welcoming party on its steps. Bolo, a muscular Oriental, observes, powerful arms folded across his massive chest. Tanya, a beautiful Western girl with blonde hair tied up.
Would you look at that?
On the ferry, Lee smiles. Roper can't take his eyes off Tanya.
A woman like that could teach you a lot about yourself.
Lee smirks and rests his head on one hand. Crates are unloaded by the waiting workmen. Others carry Roper's suitcases. Williams, in his smart red casual suit, carries a small bag. Roper, in a grey suit, follows. Lee, in a brown Chinese suit, gazes around. Tanya wears a high-collared blue blouse and a flowing white skirt.
Welcome.
She turns to lead the way. Bolo, in his mustard shirt, glares after them. In several courtyards above the landing, hordes of students in white judo suits practice martial arts moves and fight. Tanya leads Williams, Roper and Lee on a walkway above one courtyard. Lines of students punch the air in synchronization. Tanya passes through a low stone doorway. They duck through.
This way. I'll show you to your rooms. The banquet begins promptly at 8. I think you'll find our little island quite charming.
A red-stoned oriental palace perched on a wooded mountainside. Inside, well-dressed guests sit at low tables in an opulent room. Sumo wrestlers tangle on a raised stage. Acrobats tumble. Waitresses carry exotic dishes. From the ceiling hang gilded birdcages. Acrobats walk by on their hands. Stern-faced musicians pluck at traditional Chinese instruments. Bolo, in a red satin jacket, picks his way through. William sits, drinking it all in. Roper, in a satin gown, chats to an Oriental girl sitting at his feet. Another girl in a blue Chinese dress joins them. Roper, glass in hand, turns to her. An old man sits, stuffing rice into his mouth. A young man waves to waiters carrying a water tank containing live crustaceans. Surveying the scene, Lee languidly pops fruit into his mouth. A brightly coloured Chinese dragon dances. Tanya, now in a tight silver dress, gives orders to a waitress. Ahara arrives. A platter with a glazed pig. Unblinking, Lee observes Roper, happily sandwiched by two girls. Roper clocks him and stops grinning. Lee nods slightly, his cheek bulging. Roper makes excuses and leaves his new friends. Roper sits down beside Lee.
Say, I hope you haven't spent all that money you won from me yesterday. I plan to win it back.
Oh? How?
You'll find out after you've lost it.
You seem to be very much at home here, Mr. Roper.
This guy Hans got a great sense of hospitality. And a fantastic sense of style. Yeah, it's great.
Then why are you so apprehensive?
Apprehensive? No, I was just wondering whether it was okay to drink the water.
Mr. Roper, don't con me.
Wanna bet?
Lee chews food. Roper departs. Lee smiles to himself. A platter piled with chicken feet. Williams.
No, I really don't think so. Thanks.
What's the matter? You on a diet?
I like to eat, if I could find something I could keep down.
Well, I can't wait to meet our host. I hear this is only one of his beat parties. You ever been to a martial arts tournament like this?
Never.
I have a funny feeling we're being fat enough for the kill.
William sucks in his cheeks.
Better keep an eye out for the referee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Williams opens the tureen in front of him and flinches. He looks around. Roper rejoins his female companions. Musicians concentrate on instruments. Roper, in his black and red gown, sips at his drink. A studded double door is opened by servants. Han descends red-carpeted stairs, accompanied by six pretty girls in matching pale-yellow Oriental-style trouser suits. Han, dressed in a glittering gown, is a handsome Chinese man in his 50s.
Gentlemen, welcome. You honor our island. I look forward to a tournament of truly epic proportions. We are unique, gentlemen, in that we create ourselves. Through long years of rigorous training, sacrifice, denial, pain, we forge our bodies in the fire of our will. But tonight, let us celebrate. Gentlemen, you have our gratitude.
Han grins. Lee looks on sternly. Han surveys the room before picking and throwing an apple. One female bodyguard hurls an ornate pin, skewering it. Another girl skewers another apple with an earring. A third bodyguard holds out her palm. Han lobs another apple. She blows a dart, piercing the fruit. Lee catches. Lee plucks out the feathered dart and stares coldly. Han grins to all and struts away. Everyone is standing or sitting stock still. The sumo wrestlers are frozen in mid-bout. The party springs back to life. William sits, blissed out, eyes closed, listening to music on headphones.
Mr. Williams.
Tanya, her hair still tied up, but now dressed in a chic black dress, ushers six attractive young women into his room. He nods to his music, oblivious.
Mr. Williams.
Wide-eyed, he removes the headphones and smiles at the girls. He raises his eyebrows, then taps his chest.
For me?
She nods slowly, closing her eyes.
You shouldn't have. But I'll take you, darling. And you. And you. And you.
Williams points to four girls.
Please understand, if I missed anyone, it's been a big day. I'm a little tired.
Oh, of course, Mr. Williams. You must conserve your strength.
Come in.
Lee is writing. Tanya with more girls.
A gift, Mr. Lee.
Four pretty Oriental girls stare at Lee, who waves and smiles. He cocks his head at Tanya.
If you don't see anything you like.
There was a girl at the feast tonight.
Which girl, sir?
The owner of this dance.
Oh, yes. I know the one. I'll send it to you.
Lee nods, smiling. Roper, bare-chested, admires himself in a mirror. He sips at his drink.
Another fine mess you got me into. Come in.
Tanya opens the mirrored door and waves her hand regally. She gives him a smouldering look. The four girls she offered to Lee saunter in. They show no emotion until the fourth cracks a smile.
Hi.
Well, well, one more lovely than the next. What'd you have in mind?
Roper gazes straight at Tanya.
I already have.
Wise decision.
Her lips part, Roper nods. Lee opens his door to the pretty Chinese girl who blew the dart into the third apple. She enters meekly, and he fixes a stern gaze on her.
I want to talk to you, Mei Ling.
Where do you come from?
Braithwaite.
Shh, let's be quiet.
Have you seen anything?
Nothing much. I'm kept in a palace, watched always. I know nothing of Han's activities away from the palace. But I can tell you this, people disappear.
Who?
The girls, every one of them. They're summoned to Han's at night, and the next day, they're gone. I know I don't have much time.
Lee, shirtless in black trousers and plimsolls, executes martial arts moves alone. Lee spins on one leg. The door opens, revealing O'Hara.
Oh!
Scarred O'Hara stares at Lee.
You must attend the morning ritual in uniform. Outside.
Lee lowers his raised foot, breathes deeply, and punches air viciously. Students in white judo outfits perform synchronized punches. Yellow flags with a curious branch-like design flutter above them. Lee wears his brown Chinese suit.
Mr. Lee, why you no wear uniform?
Lee stares resolutely at the man, who wilts under his gaze. The man has to look away before blinking and turning tail. Lee stands still in his high-collared brown tunic. Students thrust their hands into bowls of gravel hung over fires. Lee watches the white-clad army impassively. Behind him, several other fighters are wearing yellow fighting suits adorned with Han symbol. Bolo gestures from stairs above the field and marches down to a platform flanked with more flags on poles. Han walks down with his female bodyguards, all dressed in matching purple.
Gentlemen, let the tournament begin.
Han sits on an extravagant throne. He's dressed in black tunic and white trousers.
Bolo!
Students armed with bladed spears fence. Mei Ling offers Han a bowl of red and black grapes. He smiles and eats one. Williams and Parsons, both decked out in yellow, aim punches and kicks at each other. Williams blocks and trips Parsons. Han and Tanya are watching keenly. Williams jogs back to the middle of the arena. Roper whispers to a middle-aged Chinese man behind him and indicates Williams. They nod in agreement. Bruised Parsons confronts Williams. They touch the backs of their leading hands together. Lee watches. They fight. Williams punches and kicks dazed Parsons. Williams knocks his man down. Williams looks up at Han and raises both fists in a salute. Han remains stony-faced. Roper turns to the man behind him, who hands over some banknotes.
Good work. You made me some bread.
Mr. Roper?
I'm ready.
Okay. I got myself a real pigeon here. Keep the action going for me, will you?
What do you think, Roper?
Oh, no sweat. Give my friend 8-3 all the way.
Williams sits down in front of Roper's betting chum. Roper faces off against a young Chinese guy. Roper looks up from the dirt he was kicked down into. Williams shakes his head, checks with the guy behind, and they both shake their heads. Roper shakes his head. William shakes his head yet again. Roper rises. Roper lies on the ground, his cheek discolored. The betting man taps Williams on the shoulder, but Williams waves him away. Roper looks concerned. Roper bounds back up, and they face off, wrists pressed against each other. Roper is punched down again. The betting man raises two fingers to Williams, who raises three in return. The betting man gestures and nods. Williams looks across to Roper, who nods inquiringly. Williams nods slightly and slowly. Relief floods into Roper's face. The two fighters face each other. Roper punches quickly. His opponent lies still, legs akimbo. The betting man stands flustered and pats Williams. Roper bows to Han. A woman's feet massaging Roper.
I'm finding out about myself. This is the real me. Definitely.
Do you like it here?
Oh, yeah. But a little lower.
No. I mean here on the island.
Yeah, I like it here. But a little lower.
A man like you belongs here.
Tanya's hair hangs down. She grins. He turns and she falls on him.
Oh, to you, I'm just another pretty face.
She writhes, riding him, flashing full breasts under her unbuttoned shirt. In William's room, a naked woman slips into an embroidered gown. William sits up next to another naked girl. He rolls out of bed in his white trunks and puts on a red and black satin gown. The six-pack of his abdomen ripples. He heads for the door.
Where you go?
Out in the moonlight, baby.
It is not allowed. You must stay.
Oh? Goodbye.
He waves and goes outside. The girl shrugs and combs her hair. In his room, Lee, dressed in all black, retrieves a rope and stuffs it into a small black drawstring bag. Mei Ling observes him. He pauses at the doors leading outside and flashes her a smile. He leaves, checks all around, and waves to her before flitting away. the feast chamber now deserted. Lee ducks behind a table as a guard appears. The guard twirls his nunchucks and accidentally hits a bronze Chinese lion. He swaggers round the room. Lee spies on him through a decorated chair back. Lee leaps gracefully over a banister and hides behind a large urn. The guard wanders round, oblivious to Lee. As the guard moves off, Lee tails him, stepping delicately and with fist raised. Lee ducks into cover again. Lee shadows the guard, rolling gracefully away when the guard looks around. The guard suddenly halts and looks behind him. Lee darts back out of sight. The guard walks off. Lee moves cat-like across the room and out through another door. Against a black, starless sky, Lee walks atop a wall. He jumps down, landing sweetly. From an outhouse, an Alsatian guard dog lunges for him. The dog strains against its chain, baring its fangs. Lee jumps out of its reach and flits away. He flattens himself against a wall, then ducks down. A man's shadow appears on the wall. He hits the guard with a barrage of blows and casually throws him down. Lee zooms off. He stops suddenly and spots another shadow moving against a stone wall. With an athletic standing jump, he hurls himself up into the branches of a tree. The guard walks off, gripping his nunchucks. Lee creeps past potted plants and hides from another passing sentry. Lee looks under the potted plants. He presses his hand against the slab the plants are standing on. Leaves of grass flutter in a flow of air. He knocks on the slab. He lifts two plants off the slab and opens a trap door. He peers down. Opening the drawstring bag slung across his chest, he pulls out a thin white rope. Concentrating hard, he untangles it. He throws a loop over the wall to secure it and lowers the rope through the trap door. The knotted rope dangles over a metal gantry as Lee shins down it. A shadow moving on a rocky wall. Lee pulls himself up, back out of sight, and hauls the rope up after him. Two men in blue overalls, one with a red trolley, walk underneath. The men load a sealed drum onto the trolley and wheel it away. Outside, a guard discovers Lee's rope tied round a wall. He pulls at it. Back on the rope, Lee is shaken. Lee climbs swiftly. The guard cuts the rope, which drops. Lee punches him. Lee bull rushes two guards and headbutts one. He is grabbed from behind. He resists. Williams is practicing moves, his black and red silk gown open, revealing his muscular chest. Still outside, he sits down and breathes in deeply. He suddenly looks round, alert. He points at a guard who walks off. He spots a figure in black climbing a slope.
A human fly.
Next morning.
Gentlemen,
It seems that one of you was not content last night with the hospitality of the palace and sought diversion elsewhere on the island. Who it was is not important at this time. What is important is that my guards performed their duties incompetently. And now they must prove themselves worthy to remain among us.
Four men in brown judo suits are manhandled into an arena. Hulking Bolo removes his white jacket and steps down to face them. The four men square up to him nervously. Williams watches keenly. They attack. The first is dispatched with several blows, dumped, and Bolo stamps on him. Bolo advances. Bolo straddles him, holding the man's head. Another disgraced guard is flattened. The final guard is restrained as he runs. He is thrown back at Bolo. Bolo crushes him in his arms. Han and his female entourage watch as the corpses are dragged away. Williams looks up to Han, who furrows his brow and grimaces.
Are you shocked, Mr. Williams?
Only the hot sloppy your man works.
Han pulls a face. The tournament organizer leans forward.
Mr. Lee? Are you ready?
Lee nods. Bolo, now back in his jacket, stares at Lee. The organizer chats to O'Hara, who stands up. Lee watches. O'Hara glowers at Lee and struts out of the crowd. Han's face breaks into a strange smile. O'Hara carries a wooden board under his arm. Lee and O'Hara bow to Han, who nods. Lee turns and bows to O'Hara. O'Hara holds up the board and smashes it with his fist.
Boards don't hit back.
They stare at each other.
Bolo!
Go!
Lee holds his hand up to O'Hara's. Flashback, Lee's sister plunges broken glass into her stomach. Lee punches. O'Hara rises, and again they rest the backs of their hands against each other. Lee smacks O'Hara in the face. Lee stretches his legs and they resume fighting stances. Han's students are studying the contest. O'Hara blocks punches, but Lee hits with his elbow.
O'Hara!
O'Hara sneakily attempts to trip Lee, who kicks him over. O'Hara charges. O'Hara leaps at Lee. Lee sticks his foot in O'Hara's crutch. Lee dances round his stricken opponent. O'Hara stands again. Lee kicks. The combatants spar, surrounded by a throng of Han's men. Lee swaggers forward playfully. O'Hara struggles to his feet. Oh. Lee kicks O'Hara into the crowd, scattering chairs. Lee bows to Han. O'Hara picks up a leaking bottle. He shrugs off a restraining hand, finds another bottle, and smashes the two bottles together.
O'Hara!
Lee swiftly attacks his dazed opponent with a kick to the arm. O'Hara flops around. Lee kicks him in the neck. O'Hara drops. O'Hara's legs flail. Lee leaps, knees to his chest, and lands on him. Lee's face quivers with emotion as he gazes into the distance. He turns to face Han, who stares impassively. Lee steps away and approaches Han with sure steps. O'Hara lies inert, eyes closed in his blood-stained white tunic. The organizer, with yellow arm sash, touches O'Hara's neck and then, looking to Han, slices his hand under his own neck.
O'Hara's treachery has disgraced us.
Lee stares. Han leaves at a trot, followed by his entourage. The students start to drift away. Lee strides through the staring crowd purposefully.
If you want to talk about this thing, I'll be in my room.
Gotcha.
Williams detaches the black belt from his yellow outfit.
Williams. Here, I want you to go to Han's study as soon as possible.
All right.
They climb stone steps out of the arena.
Hey, Roper! I'll see you in half an hour.
Right.
Later, Williams enters Han's study.
Mr. Han?
You fought well yesterday. Your style is unorthodox.
But effective.
It is not the art, but the combat that you enjoy.
The winning.
We are all ready to win. Just as we are born knowing only life. It is defeat that you must learn to prepare for.
Williams shakes his head.
I don't waste my time with it. When it comes, I won't even notice.
Oh, how so?
I'll be too busy looking good.
What were you looking for when you attacked my guards?
Wasn't me.
You were the only man outside the palace.
I was outside, but I wasn't the only one.
You will tell me who else.
Mr. Han, suddenly I like to leave your island.
It is not possible.
Bullshit, Mr. Handman.
Han glowers. Han's guards enter the study.
Man, you come right out of a comic book.
Four brown-shirted guards attack Williams, who kicks them away. One slumps on Han's desk. Han knocks him aside. Han rises menacingly in front of a mirror.
Been practicing, huh?
Williams kicks, Han blocks with his left hand, and Williams grimaces in pain. Han smashes a birdcage and birds flutter around as the men scrap. Williams weaves. Han punches Williams through a screen into a room full of giggling women. Williams struggles to his feet. The girls, faces painted with exotic designs, lounge around smoking in a garishly decorated den. Han brutally assaults Williams, who lands on a giggling blonde wearing sunglasses. Han stands tensed. Williams staggers up, swaying. Han kicks with both feet and William sags to the floor. Han smashes prone Williams. Han rises and inspects his blood-stained shirt cuff before removing a black leather glove to reveal a false metal hand within. Later, Han strokes a fluffy white cat.
But my friend Williams is expecting me in my room. I wanted to talk to you. We will meet your friend Williams later.
Okay.
This is my museum. It is difficult to associate these horrors with the proud civilizations that created them. Sparta, Rome, the Knights of Europe, the samurai. They worship strength because it is strength that makes all other values possible. Nothing survives without it. Who knows what delicate wonders have died out of the world for want of the strength to survive.
What's this?
Artificial left hands in cabinets.
Oh. A souvenir.
Roper looks quizzically at the displayed bones of a human hand. Han, still holding and stroking the cat, indicates a red guillotine in front of a stained glass window.
Up here.
A guillotine? No thanks. This is the only angle I care to see it from.
If you please, Mr. Roper.
Roper frowns.
You mean you want me to put my head on that thing?
An act of faith.
I'm a man of little faith, Mr. Han.
Han looks down at the cat and sticks it into the guillotine's semicircular maw. Han grabs a wooden handle on a chain dangling above the guillotine.
Very few people can be totally ruthless. It isn't easy. It takes more strength than you might believe.
The cat looks up, still lying over the guillotine. Roper narrows his eyes at Han, who stands motionless, still gripping the hanging handle in his right hand. Roper reaches down and carefully lifts the limp cat away.
Now you've got 8 more.
Roper releases the cat, who scampers away. Han is still holding on to the wooden handle.
Then there is a point. You will not go beyond.
Han pulls on the handle. They start descending.
Faked out again.
Elevator doors open in a basement. Han gestures for Roper to enter, the storage area of a basement factory.
This way.
Han leads Roper past stacked crates into a larger chamber with metal stairs and gantries.
Our power plant.
Men in blue overalls are tending to machinery. They bow to Han. Han walks through and opens a door. A woman being tattooed.
Oh, yeah. A lifetime of women, huh? A man's strength can be measured by his appetites. Indeed, a man's strength flows from his appetites.
Oh, no. They are my daughters.
Your daughters?
Han smiles.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that I misunderstood. Miss Han?
She throws him expertly.
And also, they are my most personal guard.
I admire your judgment. Nobody's as loyal as Daddy's little girl.
Mr. Roper?
No thanks. I'll get up myself. Nice meeting you.
Back in the underground factory, Roper and Han observe a man overseeing a bubbling brew.
Opium. We are investing in corruption, Mr. Roper. The business of corruption is like any other.
Oh, yeah. Provide your customers with products they need and encourage that need a little bit to stimulate your market. And pretty soon your customers will come to depend on you. I mean, really need you. It's the law of economics.
Right. And here we are stimulating quite another need.
Han walks on, followed by Roper's eyes. Nearby, in red-walled cubicles, nurses in white uniforms busy themselves. One adjusts a huge syringe. Roper joins Hahn, who stands outside a glass-fronted control room.
You wonder why I am exposing so much of myself? I forget what I see very easily. But then why are you? I'm hoping you'll join us, represent us in the United States.
I'm beginning to understand this thing with the tournament. I mean the whole setup. It's a great way to recruit new talent, huh?
Hahn nods. Behind bars, a gaggle of miserable-looking prisoners.
And who are they?
The refuse found in waterfront bars.
Shanghai?
Just lost drunken men who no longer care where they find themselves each morning.
Roper examines the black-uniformed prisoners. An old man with bags under his eyes stares back, inscrutably.
You left some rather sizable debts in America.
Diners Club hasn't called in my card yet.
William's mutilated corpse hangs behind him. Roper's face contorts in horror.
There were some questions which I was forced to ask. I got no answers.
Hahn signals, and Williams is dropped into a milky pool. Hahn scrutinizes Roper, who is taking deep breaths, his lip quivering. Roper turns and meets Hahn's gaze.
And you want me to join this? There are certain realities I want us to have a clear understanding.
Roper looks back to the pool and then to Hahn's henchmen. Roper shakes his head.
No. There's no misunderstanding between us.
Hahn nods. Outside, in the dark, Lee leaps over a wall. Hahn's yellow flags flutter above. He is dressed head to toe in black, with his bag slung across his chest. He throws himself down in a crouch. He pulls the white rope from the bag and removes a plant pot. A coiled cobra stares up at him. The snake's tongue darts in and out, its beady black eyes fixed on Lee. Inserting his left hand in the drawstring bag, he waits, then pounces on the reptile. He stuffs the writhing snake into the bag. The white robe is dangled from the ceiling hatch, and Lee lowers himself into the basement factory. Legs held out horizontally, Lee descends knot by knot, all the while keeping a keen lookout. A brown-shirted guard stops, looks, and carries on his patrol. Lee crouches behind drums. A guard with nunchucks walks by. Lee slips out and chops him from behind. A white-uniformed nurse walks past. Lee sneaks down narrow, rocky corridors. Gliding sideways, he reaches a red door. Behind glass, a haggard woman stares out.
Help me! I'm terrified! I am terrified! Help me! Please help! Come back, please! You have to come back, please! Help me! Help me!
Shut up!
Please!
Quiet! Shut up!
A nurse restrains the woman. Lee creeps along rocky walls. In the control room, one uniformed man hands another a piece of paper. Lee crouches and looks down at the squirming bag slung round his chest. He crawls behind a wall to the control room door. He wipes his hands, takes off the bag, and pulls out the glistening, writhing snake. He holds the snake up, admires it, and slaps it hard on the back of its head. He lobs the snake into the room. One man throws a chair through a window. Lee sits, hand on face, looking bored, as the men flee. He slips into the control room, sticks headphones to one ear, and twists a dial. He taps on a Morse code transmitter while stepping on the Cobra. In an office, a man with headphones types. Lee leaps from the room and fights guards. Lee's top is torn at the neck. Brown-shirted guards sprint, a red light flashes. One guard grabs a telephone. Crouched down behind opium cooking apparatus, Lee removes his tattered shirt. Guards scurry by. Topless Lee defends himself. He leaps up, kicking two men in the face simultaneously. With brutal kicks and punches, Lee takes out several men, his muscles rippling with tension. Lee prowls in a crouch, his eyes focused ahead. Sweat glistens on his wiry torso. A guard blocks his path. Lee grins intensely as he breaks a neck. He punches at elevator buttons and tries to prise the doors open. No movement. He slowly turns, tensing. A dozen guards mob him. One by one, he cripples them all with punches, chops, kicks, and gouges. One more. More men armed with staves pour from the elevator. Now armed with a stave, Lee adopts a defensive stance. He is surrounded by guards. His assailants are battered, and he grabs two bits of broken stave, one in each hand. Fighting with his two mini clubs, he beats down four more attackers. From behind bars, excited prisoners grab one of Han's men. Lee tenses, wide-eyed. An elderly prisoner watches emotionless. Lee is poised, ready for action. Using his two sticks, Lee swiftly knocks down several attackers. More arrive. He pummels them one by one. One final henchman in blue overalls hurls himself forward, wielding nunchucks. Lee disarms him and brandishes the nunchucks. The man retreats in awe, massaging his hand. Lee whirls the nunchaku around his muscular chest, then freezes. The confused man charges. Metal doors drop from above, trapping Lee. In In a rock-walled room, Lee sits cross-legged on the dusty floor. He drapes the nunchucks round his neck, a look of grim determination on his face. Above him, Han appears.
The battle with the guards was magnificent. Your skill is extraordinary. And I was going to ask you to join us.
A tray is placed beside his bed. He dons spectacles and reads a message while tea is poured.
My God, this came in half an hour ago. Why didn't I... Hello. Put your colonel on. Well, wake him up. I don't care if he's not alone. Damn it all, I don't care who he's with. You bloody well put him on the line.
A yellow flag with Han's distorted branch-like insignia flutters in the breeze. Roper, clad in yellow again, emerges flanked by guards. He is led into the fighting arena. Han sits on his throne, flanked by his girl guards. Lee stands clad in loose black trousers, Bolo behind him in white.
Good morning, Mr. Roper. We have been waiting for you.
What's going on?
Would you be good enough to participate in this morning's edification?
Edification?
Han smiles. Roper glances at Lee, who stands, arms behind his back.
What are you going to do to him?
Not me, Mr. Roper. You.
Han points a black-gloved finger.
Bolo.
Bolo theatrically produces a knife and cuts Lee's bonds. Lee rips the severed rope from his wrists and throws it to the ground. Roper watches. Tanya steps forward on the raised stage. Mei Ling sneaks off behind Han, who is unaware. Mei Ling looks into the arena, then scoots off. Lee stands braced on the green turf, dozens of white judo-suited students behind him. Roper, in his yellow outfit, stands opposite Lee. He turns to Han.
Like you said, there's a point I won't go beyond.
I was right about you. We shall strive to be worthy of your sense of grandeur. I will find someone with whom you can fight. Bolo!
Bolo strides forth into the arena and bows to Han. He stands facing Roper. 100 students form a rectangle around them. Lee tries to step in front of Roper, who places his hand over Lee's chest. Roper and Bolo face off. Roper kicks out at Bolo. Roper is knocked down. Bolo traps him with his legs. Roper bites Bolo's leg. Bolo rolls away and Roper kicks him in the face. Bolo lifts Roper and dumps him on the ground. Roper kicks and jumps to his feet in one bound. Mei Ling unlocks cell gates, freeing prisoners. Black-clad prisoners pour out. Bolo and Roper circle each other. Bolo grimaces, clutching his balls. Han's face twitches angrily. Bolo's head lolls over Roper's plimsoll and then drops.
Wong Lung, Hong Sing, Chin Moi, Hong Rai, Da! Dagula! Da!
Four men converge on Lee and Roper. Lee kicks down two in one flowing move. Another is booted repeatedly in the face. On board a military ship, blue-shirted men with rifles leap into a yellow helicopter.
Lee, Wong Fu! Quick, go destroy them! Kill!
Lee expertly dispatches three more assailants. Another grabs from behind. He elbows him. Roper kicks away three attackers, drags a fourth to the floor, and stamps in his face.
Chenlu, Wong Gao, Dan Chung, Lao Biu, Da! Why did I go? Da Zikula!
Lee whirls amid a sea of attacking students, disabling them with high kicks and occasional forearm smashes. Han encourages more students to attack. Suddenly, black-clad prisoners charge in. Black against white, a huge melee. Roper kicks one opponent, then another, then punches the first again. Men fly through the air and land in the dust. Lee and Roper cripple several students. A student throws a man and then has a chair broken over his head. The massive brawl continues. Han watches in dismay as his army gets a beating. Lee kicks a student in the face. A student holds himself in a doorway using a stave. It is shattered and he falls back. Han reaches for a small box sitting on his throne. Detaching his fake gloved hand, he screws on a furry paw with three razor-sharp claws. Han claws a prisoner in the face. Lee strikes a heroic pose over his latest victim. He looks towards Han. Lee stares unblinking at Han. Han leaps at Lee, feints with his right and claws with his left. Blood stains Lee's cheek. Lee shoves Han's claws into a table and elbows him in the face. The claws remain while Han lies slumped in the dust waving an empty stump. Lee is assaulted by more and more of Han's men. Han scurries off. Lee spots him in the distance, weaving through fighting men. Lee pursues. Han climbs on a wall. Lee hops over a lion statue and punches a student off the wall. Han sprints into his museum, wrestles with a locked cabinet, and smashes his left stump into it. Inside, a four-fingered metallic hand with blades, Lee arrives.
You have offended my family, and you have offended the Shaolin Temple.
Han raises his new left hand, a silver rectangular box with four long blades. Han's once slick hair is tangled over his forehead. Lee crouches defensively. They circle each other. Lee wraps his legs round Han's and drops him. Lee recoils, scarlet claw marks on his cheeks. Han smiles. They kick out at each other. Han sneers. Lee kicks him in the face. They leap past each other. Han rakes Lee's chest. Lee dabs at his bleeding wounds and licks his finger. They leap again. Lee's heel smashes into Han's nose. Han staggers up. Lee spits. Han lunges. Lee kicks out Han's leg. Han crashes to the floor again. Han slashes Lee. Lee dumps Han. Lee kicks Han in the side of the head. Dazed Han stumbles backwards. Lee grabs Han's head, reverse kicks him in the face, and punches him. Lee twitches and crouches. Han grabs a spear from a statue. His face contorted, Han charges. Han plunges the spear halfway through a wall. Lee knocks him back, then skips away under a cabinet, which Han smashes. Han pushes the wall. It revolves and he disappears through it. The spear sticks out from a huge mirror. Lee touches the mirrored wall. Lee peers round the secret revolving mirrored wall and nips through. A room covered in mirrors. Lee lunges behind a coat stand, but finds nothing. His belly sports three bloody horizontal lines. The mirrors show multiple images of Lee, then of Han prowling. Han lurks, metal claws poised. Lee peers round a mirrored corner. Han watches Lee pass and stalks him. Multiple mirrors show different images of the men in different perspectives. Han forearm smashes Lee. Han has disappeared. Lee glances around at the mirrored walls. Lee glides around the room, tensed, searching. He backs along a mirrored wall. Han appears in the mirror. Lee turns a corner. Han follows and slashes his back. Lee punches out and smashes a mirror. Han has disappeared again. Lee searches. Layered mirrors reflect multiple images of Lee's bleeding, determined face. Lee kicks Han. Han goes down. Han rolls across the floor and disappears. Lee stands against a mirror and ponders.
Remember, the enemy has only images and illusions, behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and you will break the enemy.
Lee's eyes narrow as he looks down. He suddenly looks up. The reflected image of Han's face rises. Lee smashes the mirror. Lee throws a coat stand into a tub and smashes mirror after mirror. Lee, arms tensed, fists clenched, slinks past shattered mirrors. A broken mirror reflects Han. He holds aloft his shiny metal hand with its vicious blades. Blood oozes on his battered and bruised face. Lee whirls to confront him. They close in on each other. Lee kicks Han square in the chest. Han flies backwards and is impaled on the spear protruding from the mirror. Lee stares. Lee approaches the hanging body. Lee pushes on the mirror, which revolves. Lee passes through as the mirror continues to spin, Han still dangling on the bloodied spear. Outside, Roper sits wearily, his face bruised. Dark uniformed prisoners wander around, checking on the students who have surrendered. Four prisoners in a circle jostle one student, shoving him around between them. Roper surveys the carnage. Broken chairs and overturned tables litter the courtyard. Under a wall, the prostrate form of Tanya, face down, unmoving. Roper closes his eyes and clenches his mouth. He hangs his head. Lee appears, battered and weary, in a stone doorway above him. Lee looks over to Roper and raises a thumb in a victory salute. Roper returns the gesture. Lee looks up to see three military helicopters flying over the treetops and coming in to land on the island. Lee looks back down into the courtyard. Still protruding from a table, Han's furry three-pronged claw. The end. ITFC audio description.